Welcome to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. What did George Washington do that you might not know about? What did Abe Lincoln know that could change the way you think about the Civil War? You'll learn about all that and more on this special show designed to restore excitement in American history. Let's get started. Shining a light on the stars of American history is the focus of the Grateful American Foundation. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, executive producer of the Grateful American series, here today with my co-host, David Bruce Smith, founder of the Grateful American Foundation. And we are honored because we are sitting in the office of John Gray, the director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. We're also here with Bruce Cole, another man who spent his career bringing history to life for many, many people. So welcome to our show, gentlemen.
To be here.
Thank you.
And thank you for having us. But before we launch into our Q&A, we've already done wonderful interviews with each of you, but we want to tell our audience a little bit more. John Gray has been the director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History since July 2012. He oversees 234 employees, a budget of more than $34 million, and the renewal of the museum's 120,000 square foot West Exhibition Wing. Bruce Cole is a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center here in Washington, D.C., a member of the Eisenhower Memorial Commission, and a former chairman of the National Endowment of the Humanities. So today, we are going to be talking about the future of American history. You've already both told us a little bit about why American history isn't the most popular subject, but let's have that discussion again. I'm going to throw it over to Bruce Cole. You have a lot of information about the research, which shows that too few Americans know much about this topic. Can you tell us some of those statistics and why you think that is?
Yeah, there's a lot of metrics about this. The Department of Education issues a national report card, and the scores for seniors in the history test are very low. About 50% do below basic, and you can't do worse than that. There are also lots of stats about students in colleges and universities where history is not required much anymore, about 10% last time I looked. So there is a statistically proven lack of knowledge among American students, and this is, I think, a real challenge for the nation because we need to know who we are, and we need to know where we've come from, and we need to know where we're going, and history provides that guide. We also need to know about our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and our creed of America, which is the Declaration, and the blueprint for America, which is the Constitution. And citizens who don't really understand that cannot fully participate in our democracy. I mean, what Jefferson said was, a nation that is ignorant and free is a nation that never was and never will be. And from the very beginning, the founders understood the importance of history and civic education to perpetuate the government. There's a famous story when Franklin came out of the Constitutional Convention and someone came up to him and said, "Dr. Franklin, what have you given us, a monarchy or a republic?" People thought, well, maybe they would have a monarchy. They weren't sure. And Franklin said, "Republic. If you can keep it." And it's that "if you can keep it" is why history, I think, is so important.
So this is a question that references something you said, Bruce, but it's really for both of you. When you were on the Eisenhower Commission, you said that a monument, this country is monument-oriented. A monument should be an exclamation mark and not a question mark. For the things that have been memorialized, Lincoln, Jefferson, how do you think we've done?
Well, I think we've done pretty well. I think in the present configuration, we're not going to do so well with the Eisenhower Memorial, simply because what you said, and I believe a memorial should be mark, not a question mark. And if you look at the Lincoln Memorial or Jefferson Memorial, you see how architecture elevates and creates a sense of awe as you walk up the steps in front of the reflecting a pool, and then you're in the presence. I mean, words don't can really express it. My problem with the Eisenhower Memorial is that it doesn't do any of that. It's a bunch of stuff. But that maybe is a topic for another day.
Actually, Bruce, I don't think it is. I think it gets to a point, if you spend much time in Washington, you see where people go. They go down to the Lincoln Memorial, and they spend a lot of time there, and Jefferson and all of that. And it is their way in which to understand their own history, and then they become more interested. This whole notion of what history can do and how it becomes accessible is represented in this building. This building was built to be a modern building 50 years ago. And if you notice, you walk in the front door without a question of elevation. And what we're trying to do now is create it to be a very special place where you actually feel when you're in it that American history is profoundly important and make that statement. And so monuments and places of veneration are hugely important to us. We shouldn't become slavish about that. On the other hand, it is the moment in which you really can understand something and be touched by it.
So when I say memorial, I'm using it, I'm saying it literally, but I'm also using it as a metaphor to see how we are capturing time, different points of time, and to make the point that for today's kids, something has to be three-dimensional in order to be accessible in most cases. We were growing up, and you went through a museum. I mean, it was a bunch of cards and, you know, stuff behind glass, and it was kind of boring for most kids. But today, it's got to be different. So that's why I'm bringing the memorial question up. Eisenhower, because it's been in the paper, and Eisenhower because he is a major American figure who is not known by high school kids at all. I mean, Kennedy is barely known, actually. It starts with Reagan. High school kids know Reagan.
I think that goes to your point, John, earlier in our conversation where you were saying people know what's familiar to them. So you're trying to start the conversation there, which brings me to the question of, you know, teachers are maxed out. We had that conversation with Bruce a little bit ago about they try, but sometimes they're not educated in the subject. So what we're trying to do with the Grateful American Foundation is help parents and grandparents educate their children by inspiring everyone to go back and share stories and legacy, just like you were mentioning about history.
Well, you want to really read something stirring. I mean, aside from whatever your political orientation is, read Ronald Reagan's farewell address, because about the last quarter of it is devoted to American history. And just think about it. This is a president who served two terms, momentous events have happened, and what does he focus in towards the end of the address is the problem of American history. And he says, you know, when I was growing up, we knew somebody who had been part of American history in a war or something like that. And then we talked about American history around the dining room table. And he says, you know, this is not happening anymore. And he sounds this warning about the what we would call American history illiteracy or amnesia. And he says, we've got to do something about it. That is a really interesting speech. Generally, that's the Shining City on the Hill speech. But that last part, when he talks about American history, has been too ignored, I think. And that's interesting, you know, to say a president who served 8 years. One of the major concerns, you know, that's what you do in your farewell address, is this idea that American history has to be. That's completely nonpartisan.
Do you think if you have a president who's is a great communicator, but his words are mediocre, can he or she have the same effect in motivating people to study American history? Is it the words, or is it the delivery, or is it both?
Well, I think it's the words. Certainly, I mean, the great communicators have been pretty great presidents when you think about it. You know, Jefferson and Lincoln, Roosevelt, Reagan, Kennedy as well. But I think it also has to be, there also be deeds that back the words. If you have a great communicator, but who was able to sway people, but then his, you know, or maybe her in the future administration doesn't deliver on that, I think that the words are hollow.
So, John, how are you looping all this together? And how can parents and grandparents spread the word and work together to help kids love history and also educate themselves better?
Well, I think Bruce's point of utilizing art and artifacts is actually a wonderful way and an exciting way. At the museum, we have a great show on called the Hall of Transportation, and people are attracted to this extraordinary locomotive that's out front and also the locomotive that's in there. But the story around Western migration and expansion through transportation, liberation of women with cars, I mean, it's just fascinating. And you really can understand it if you see it visually and have it explained in a larger context. So I think utilizing pictures and artifacts is an enormous way to go to it. But I'd also say things that Bruce said, you have to make it relevant for people. We have a great show on the Star Spangled Banner. And as you, and it's historic setting, but when you exit, you watch this video of today's use of the American flag by all of us. It remains a vibrant symbol, and so you can think about it as your flag today. It isn't a thing of the past. It's a thing of the present formed on what the past was.
One of the things I'm struck by is I've been working with Lee Hamilton, who is a great figure, I think. He's in Congress for many, many years. He's he was a Democrat, but I think he was one of the last people to really reach across the aisle. And I was on the board of trustees at Indiana University, and he's got this civics program down there, Center on Congress. And I've talked to Lee a lot. And Lee's goal is, he says, what he wants to do is reach the people who have breakfast at McDonald's. And I think that's really an enviable goal, is to kind of reach as many Americans as you can. We thought about that when I was in the endowment. You know, could we partner with shopping centers or with McDonald's or places like that to try to get in some way to get this across? I don't know that that's possible or not. But that's what I always thought my target audience was. I mean, you know, educated Americans are more, I think, you know, highly educated Americans may know a little bit more about this. But I think there are people who are eager to know something about American history in every part of the country, and those are the kind of people I think we need to reach, and those are the kind of people who are going to show up here.
Yeah, 5 million people, you said, 5 million visitors a year, clearly.
We've started a program on civic discourse, and what's been so fascinating is it's going to go out to 8 cities around the country, is what do you actually talk about and how do you phrase it? So people will be open to talking about it and comfortable enough to talk about it. Because if you phrase it, this gets back to your point, David, if you phrase it in a way that people can understand and also be inspired, they're going to pull into that kind of a conversation as opposed to put them off. And I think we are becoming more sophisticated and focused on how you can both inform and educate. And I'd also say we shouldn't hesitate to try to entertain them so we can bring them in and hook them and get them going.
Well, history should be entertaining. That's what I think great historians often do. It's scholarship, but it's also an art. And great history writing is entertaining. I mean, that's very few historians can really do that well. And you're entertained as you're learning.
I think Bruce is absolutely right. How many books have you said, well, I can't put that down? And it's not because you should read them to get the information in there. It's because you really want to know what happens with this story.
Right, exactly.
So looping people in emotionally at whatever level reminds me of Howard Gardner's from Harvard, his theory of emotional intelligence, where you have, depending on how smart you are or how you are smart, picture smart, word smart, kinetically smart, that you need to be engaged on that level. And the more you can do, the better, and it sounds like you're doing exactly that here. So as we leave, can you each give us one thing that parents and grandparents can do to get their kids psyched about American history?
Well, I think this is dinner table conversation ideas, right? I mean, try to talk about history And, you know, the thing is that the way you hook so many people in is about their local history. What happened in their community or what happened in their town. And I'm a big fan of teaching of local history as a hook to get people in because they'll see these things. They'll know, oh, gosh, that person lived here, or they'll go to their local history museum. And it doesn't have to be at first a kind of larger, more universal thing. It can be something very, very and small. And I mean, in some way, that's the way I got hooked into history. And I think that's very exciting for people. I mean, it has to be done the right way.
Perfect. And you, John?
I agree with Bruce. I'd also suggest, particularly to grandparents and parents, that you start to talk about what interests you in history and what your memories are, and use those then to pivot off and create the memories for your offspring, because that's really what it's all about. And that gives you your emotional connection, and it also opens the doors for you.
And then people do talk about their own family history a lot, you know, who their ancestors were and the like, so that's a natural hook as well. And that's why I think somebody like, I feel like Ancestry.com has done so well. People are eager to research their family and learn their own history.
Yeah, so going deeper, bringing in the love and the emotions, excellent. Well, thank you both so much for this time and for doing these three podcasts with us today. We are here at the Smithsonian with John Gray and Bruce Cole. On behalf of David Bruce Smith, founder of the Grateful American Foundation, and myself, we thank you for your time. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in American history for kids and adults. We'll talk to you soon.
You have been listening to the Grateful American Radio Show, hosted by author and publisher David Bruce Smith. Here's to restoring enthusiasm in history for kids and adults, too.